Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Over the last decade, two tech giants have been locked in a legal battle over lines of code.
We will hear argument first this morning in case 18956, Google versus Oracle.
Back when Google was building the Android operating system, it used software that was created and copyrighted by Oracle. So Oracle said, hey, you can't steal our stuff. And then Google said, actually, we can, because this is fair use.
With respect to fair use, the long-settled practice of reusing software interfaces is critical to modern interoperable computer software.
Earlier this week, the Supreme Court sided with Google, saying that the company's use of the programming code, in fact, does count as fair use. But what is going on here? Here to explain is Ian Millhiser. He covers the Supreme Court for Vox. Hey, Ian.
Hey, how's it going?
So this case has an extraordinarily long history, as these legal entanglements often go. Tell me about where this battle started.
When Google was just starting to build what became the Android, you know, smartphone system.
Right.
They wanted to make it as easy as possible for people who already knew how to code, like people who knew existing programming languages, to be able to take the knowledge they already had and produce Android apps. And, you know, the reason for that is fairly obvious. You know, if someone wants me to do a new thing and it's pretty similar to something that I already know how to do, I'm more likely to do it than I have to go to the trouble of learning a whole new programming language from scratch.
Sure.
Oracle owns the copyright to a programming language called Java, which just lots of people knew how to write Java programs. So what Google did was they basically copied the portions of the Java code that basically set the vocabulary term.
Okay.
If you're used to entering a particular sequence in order to tell the computer to multiply two numbers, you'd use the same sequence for Java that you would use for making an Android app. And again, the goal here was just to make this easy on developers, because if it was easy for developers, then, you know, there were thousands, potentially even millions of people who already knew how to code in Java. And this way, if they already knew how to code in Java, it would be very easy for them to start making apps for the Android phone system.
Sure. So, Ian, what did the Supreme Court say this week?
So the Supreme Court said that it is fair use for Google to copy the particular lines of code that they copied from Oracle. And so the Supreme Court's reasoning was, yeah, Google took this code that belonged to someone else, but we still think it's okay. And the reason it's okay is that the particular code that Google took led to all of this innovation. I mean, I can't even imagine how many thousands or even millions of Android apps exist right now. So, like, all of these great ideas, all of this new software, all of these apps proliferated, and it might not have happened if Google hadn't designed its own software in a way that made it as easy as possible for existing Java programmers to make these new apps.
Okay, so Google's argument, it hinges on the fair use doctrine. Tell me what that is.
The fair use doctrine is an exception to the ordinary copyright rule that basically says, you know, the goal of copyright law is to encourage the proliferation of knowledge and the proliferation of new ideas and new works. And so we don't want the copyright law to work against itself. It would probably be fair use if there was a law professor who wanted to teach a chapter of my book. They could just go to the photocopy machine, run off a bunch of copies of it, pass them out to their students, and that would probably be fair use. And the reason why is because if a law professor teaches my ideas to their students, that's going to tend to enhance knowledge and lead to those students coming up with more ideas and maybe producing their own works. And so that is consistent with the goals of copyright.
So, Ian, this is a fight between two tech giants that, you know, is pretty in the weeds, but taking a step back here, What does this mean for technology and sort of copyright issues more broadly? Let's say if the Supreme Court had ruled in Oracle's favor instead, how might the world look a little bit different?
I suspect the world could have looked very different because, I mean, there are billions of dollars at stake in this lawsuit. I'm not exactly sure what the remedy would be when you're saying that one of the foundational building blocks of one of the most important technologies in the world was stolen.
Yeah.
That's a very difficult problem to unwind. But, you know, if we take a step back a bit, you know, the other thing that this decision does is it makes it easier for us to have, you know, I don't know if we could have a common programming language where like every app and every piece of software that's ever created is used in the same language. But it does help for there to be, you know, more commonality so that someone who already knows how to design software for an existing technology is going to be more likely to be able to also design apps for a new technology. Here's why it's useful. Last April, when the pandemic was at its peak and when we had a big expansion of unemployment benefits, the state of New Jersey's system crashed.
The online system that handles New Jersey's unemployment benefits remains down this morning. They're calling the problem an unplanned system outage.
As it turns out, the state of New Jersey's system was written in a language called COBOL, which was invented in the 1950s. And there just aren't that many people around who know how to code in COBOL, because, like, why would you learn how to write in a programming language from the 1950s? And so they had to put out an emergency request for retired programmers, you know, trying to find octogenarians who knew how to write in this antediluvian programming language.
And secondly, in our list of volunteers, Judy, not only do we need healthcare workers, but given the legacy systems, we should add a page for COBOL computer skills. We have systems that are 40 plus years old.
If there had been some intentionality behind how programming languages developed, if there had been some thought put to, well, how do we make sure that our new languages still build on, you know, familiar vocabulary and familiar terms to people who already know how to program in older languages? It means that when you have these older systems, people might still be able to navigate them. And it also means that when a new technology develops, you aren't stuck in a world where in order for someone to develop applications for that new technology, they have to learn, you know, essentially a whole new language in order to do it.
Ian Millhiser, thank you so much for joining us. You can read more of Ian's work at Vox.com. Thanks, Ian.
Thanks so much for having me.
And folks, you can email recodedaily@recode.net. if there are ideas you have for future episodes. Thanks so much.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smart Water Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.